On this episode of The Edge Podcast, Jeanette Marks, CEO of AirSwift, joins ClearEdge CEO Leslie Vickery to discuss why it's so important to be your own career champion, as well as how to boost your confidence, overcome adversity, and break the glass ceiling. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, everyone. This is Leslie Vickery, the CEO and founder of ClearEdge Marketing, and I am thrilled to have Jeanette Marks with me for the Edge podcast. And she is the CEO of AirSwift, which is an international workforce solutions provider within the energy, process, and infrastructure industries. Jeanette, welcome to the Edge.
Thank you so much for having me, Leslie. I really appreciate it.
Of course. It's fun to have you here today. I know we typically are together in work settings, so it'll be nice to get to know you and share more of your background with our audience. To start, you have spent the past 4 years as the Chief Operating Officer for AirSwift before moving into your role as CEO. What surprised you most about your journey to CEO, and what do you think that others can learn from your experience?
You know what? It's been quite the fun journey, Leslie, and for the first part of my career, a major part for 19 years, I was working for the largest workforce solutions company in the world. And when you work for one of the really large companies in an executive position, you're typically running, either the front end of the company or, you know, a shared service center. So you're running different parts of it, but not the entirety of the company from front to back, and all the details that go into that. And I would say making the leap from the executive position that I had there over into the COO role gave me a lot more exposure to not only the global differences in cultures, legislation, et cetera, but it also gave me a really good understanding of all of the different departments at a much deeper level with that accountability as well. And when you become CEO, you're responsible for everything. So you need to have really good people around you. You need to make sure you've got people you trust that can dive deep into the areas that you may not have grown up in the business, but you also have to have a good understanding of each of those areas and the level and depth that you need to know in some of those different functions is more surprising, I would say. But you can engage across the board now, and I really enjoy it because there's every aspect of the company that I get to be involved in.
Excellent. Well, I know we'll talk a little bit later in the podcast about kind of breaking through the glass ceiling and your role as CEO and being in the C-suite in our industry. I, for one, I had just seen you at an event. I believe it was Bullhorn Engage, and we were chatting at the Monster reception there that evening, and then maybe it was 2 days later that you were announced as the CEO. So I was really happy to see someone we respect in the industry continue to get risen up in their role. So congratulations again on making it to the CEO path. And you're right, there's no hiding. Everything rolls up to you accountability-wise. So, but that's exciting too. It's a great opportunity for you. So I'm really happy about it. Many people may not be familiar with AirSwift listening to the podcast. So for those who are not, perhaps you could share a little bit about the company itself.
Absolutely. AirSwift is a global company. We have 60 offices around the world, and we really focus and specialize in engineering and technical positions. So we do everything from recruiting different specialists to mobilizing them to the different countries that they're going to work in. So we work with a lot of all the big energy companies, a lot of big project-based companies in different parts of the world. And when they have a huge project in a different country, a lot of times their issue is talent. How do they get the right talent into the country, visas, immigration? Where do they stay? What type of rotations do they work on? How do they get around? What are their cars? So we are both recruitment, we are global mobility, we are consultancy in helping workforce plans with our clients on where they're headed and what issues they may have and how we can work through that. Partnering with training companies and really working to provide a full solution to our clients in many interesting parts of the world. So I've seen more of the world than I thought I ever would working at AirSwift, and it is fun because I am on a plane probably more than on the ground at this point.
Right. Well, as you said earlier, when you get that global reach and experience, it is exciting and quite an opportunity. And for those who don't have the experience, I know I just happened to have a client meeting in London and then over in Switzerland for the same company. And it's fun to get overseas and learn from the global perspective and then come back and see what we can learn from international cities here in the U.S. as well as what the U.S. is doing that we can take over overseas. So I love the fact that you're in that global capacity. You're also obviously an industry veteran within the recruitment space. You're in kind of two scenarios, I would say, two primarily male-dominated industries. I wouldn't have traditionally thought of that for the recruitment industry itself, because we have a lot of women who we work with day-to-day in the, I would say, fee earner role, so recruiters and sales reps, and then in the mid-level management. We did a study, however, of the top 50 staffing companies and found that 73% of the C-suite were men compared to 27% who were women. And I firmly believe, and perhaps you've heard me say this before, that if you can't see it, you can't be it. So having more visible female CEO role models such as yourself, it's really important for those rising stars and the next generation of leaders who we're trying to impact and influence as well. So I'm sure they would love to learn from you. I guess the question that isn't asked that often would be, do you see a common denominator among women who successfully break through the glass ceiling? And if yes, what is that?
I would say yes, I do. And just to your point, too, at AirSwift, I'm the first female CEO that we've had. And AirSwift's been around for almost 40 years now. So it's been around for a long time. And you're right, because we've been in engineering, it has been a little bit more male-dominated. And now that you can see it, it's inspirational for so many different people to be able to know, you know, you can get to different levels and different places in your career. And as I look at other female CEOs and women who have broken the glass ceiling and have moved forward, I think a lot of it's about taking the right risks as opposed to playing it safe. And you'll see that there's just this drive that's deep inside these women that you just can't, you know, extinguish. It's there and it's this flame and it's going to keep going. But these women, they're willing to step into the unknown and do something different than they've done before without exactly knowing where it will lead. It's not safe to step into the unknown. So if you catapult yourself, you do that by taking those types of risks. Along with that, that drive comes to a steady focus. It's like, what's their clear focus on what they need to do within their company, their department, their area, that really drives the results that they're looking for as well. So it's a couple different things that I see with so many different dynamic women that climb to the top and break through. But it's interesting. Some of the studies say that women spend an average of 23 years at a single company before becoming a CEO, while men spend an average of 15 years before they can get into that spot. And I think a lot of that has to do with the risks that, you know, women may or may not be willing to take in their careers. So I think one of my risks earlier on, too, I was very comfortable, very happy out in California. I was an RVP, regional vice president at the time, in Southern California, doing quite well. And I got tapped on the shoulder and asked to move to the East Coast. And my network was in California. My family was in California. My internal recruitment pipeline was in California. My clients were in California. Everything I knew was in California. And I think that was one of the big risks that I took in my career of, I never thought I would leave, but leaving was one of my career catapults to help position me into a higher level position. That was my first senior vice president role, you know, before I even progressed on from there. But I went to the East Coast with the same focus I had in California, had built a great team around me, lots of great talent, and had to build back from scratch what I had from before, but leveraging the talent around me and really working through that. And with that clear focus, we made great things happen out there. And my career continued to grow as a result of it. So I owe a lot of that to my team as well.
So someone definitely saw something in you, Jeanette, as you were growing in your career and tapping you on your shoulder to go. And I would agree, there's a lot of common denominators or factors that go into it. And, you know, you mentioned being willing to take a risk and really, I guess, doing something that you weren't really comfortable doing, having to completely rebuild it. What are your thoughts as far as the importance of other people? So I don't know if it's the person who taps you on your shoulder or someone else, but being there, I truly believe first and foremost, you have to be your own career champion. If you don't do it, no one else will. But what do you think the importance is of other people being your career champion? How has that played an important role in your career?
I think that that is vitally important, to make sure that you have the right sponsors around you and the right mentors to help you along your way as well. And your mentors come at different phases of your career and at different times and for different reasons, whatever your challenges are that you're faced with at that time. And it's knowing who to lean on when it's the right time. I will say one of the things I learned throughout my career, I think one of my bigger lessons, was on my peer relationships and really making sure that I was building out those relationships as much as I was my vertical, up and down line. And there are so many people in a company that when they are looking at who should we promote, you know, who would be right for that. One of the things that I think that stood out in my career is what I call my volunteer time. It wasn't my volunteer time externally, which I do as well, but it was my internal volunteer time. And what I mean by that is I would always volunteer for different task force, for there's an important company initiative, this is happening, they need people to help figure it out and make it happen. And through those different task force, I got exposure to people all over the company in different departments, different areas, regions, et cetera. And by being able to get that exposure, I was creating, without realizing it, more people who were holding me up, lifting me up, saying great things about me, so that when the time came and somebody asked, hey, what do you think, that I would have a positive response. So I meant it every time I volunteered. I loved doing it, and I always wanted a challenge. But I think when you put yourself into different positions and different work groups, you can really expose your talents to others. That helps. The wider you spread that net of exposure, the better chances you have of being noticed for various different promotions.
It's a really interesting point you bring up, because we always talk about networking and the importance of building your network externally, but don't really focus a lot of time on how, and it seems obvious, but at the same time, people don't often do what you're saying, which is build that network around you. It's usually the work group you're in and the people you spend day in and day out with in your office and so forth, but getting to know and to build that support system within your company makes a whole lot of sense. So that's great advice. Thank you. Now, you being in your new-ish role now, it's been a little while, but in the CEO role, you can really tell a lot about a leader by watching how they rise to the occasion and handle difficult situations. And certainly the stress put on a CEO is quite heavy to carry on your shoulders. And certainly when things happen, whether it be a natural disaster or something within the company or a client deliverable or something that a contractor or consultant does, you know, you really have to step up and address those situations. So I'd love to learn from you, what is the biggest failure or situation where you faced adversity in your career? And what did you learn from it? And then I guess I'd say, how did it impact your decisions or focus afterwards?
I would say one of the biggest issues or pieces of adversity that I faced was early on in my career, and it helped to shape who I am as a leader. And it was a time earlier on when I was running a branch, and we had gone through an acquisition, and I had a new leader from the opposite company, and things just weren't working very well between the two of us. And it was really interesting because I went from being a high performer and somebody who was looked up to having a really difficult time with this direct manager of mine. And it changed me in that moment where I became not good at what I was doing. I didn't want to perform well. I didn't want her to look good. I didn't want, and it was a really interesting transformation that 6 months into it, I stopped and I was talking to one of my mentors. I said, I can't do this anymore. It's impacting my office. We're not performing well anymore. And the level of, you know, us not working well together was pretty high. And I was constantly blaming her, you know, this is crazy. This is happening to me. And at that moment, when I was talking to them and saying, okay, I can't do this anymore, maybe it's time for me to go, thinking about leaving, it was like that moment in time where I had to say, okay, I'm either leaving and I'm walking away from this all, or I need to accept what's happened and accept my part of this relationship. I'm half of this relationship, and figure out how I'm going to work through this and really work with my team and make sure that we're aligned and that we can do this. So I chose the latter, and I sucked it up, and I said, okay, let me own this now. And it was really interesting to see the difference in my team in the office and how they responded so quickly to it, and how much my own attitude was bringing my team down just because of the conflict I had ahead of me, above me. And it was great to see the outcome of that. We worked through it. Things were turning in the right direction. Shortly thereafter, this person ended up resigning herself. And the next 6 months of that year, we had the best 6 months that we had ever had in that office, which catapulted us into the top high performing, you know, office categories. And it was my first time getting to go to one of those big events where you get to celebrate your achievements. But when I look back at that time, it really shaped me with, at no matter what time in your career, you're going to have adversity. You're going to have somebody you're working for that you don't quite get along with or you don't quite agree with. You're going to have different issues within the company of decisions that are made or things that don't go your way. And I look at it as, okay, do you toughen it up, work through it, accept what's happened, and figure out your path forward, or do you run and go do something else? Because what I do, I'm either all in or I'm not in. So I've got to be all in with it. But it helped to shape how I worked with different levels of adversity and come to accept it, but also come to accept that I have responsibility in whatever that adversity is coming my way, and I've got to own it, and I've got to work past it and find my own path forward that works. So it's not to blame somebody else. It's how do I take responsibility and work through it.
Right. Really a culture of accountability and responsibility. There's a great book. I don't know if you know Mary Lucas from the industry. She has a book she published called Lunch Meat and Life Lessons. It's about experiences her father had in a butcher shop that he owned and ran. And then she wrote a book about it and how it relates to our industry. But one of the chapters that stands out in particular is the experience you had in working with someone and how to communicate through difficult situations and challenges and, you know, be radically candid and come from the heart, but also look to yourself and understand what is it that perhaps you're doing to fuel or foster that situation in a way that needs to change as well, and have the right kind of attitude going into it. So definitely a good read and a great story. So thank you for sharing that. I have to say, you always, at least from the outside looking in, seem full of confidence. And, you know, obviously getting into the position that you're in, you have to have some air of confidence going into that, because there's a level of trust and belief that comes with that as well. Was there ever a time, and the reason we ask this question is, I think you know I'm a co-founder of a group called ARA. It's Attract, Retain, and Advance Women in Technology. We have about 6,000 men and women part of the program across the U.S., and we publish an annual thought leadership survey. This year, we had nearly 700 people, men and women, take the survey. And every year, it's the third year we've done it, the number one piece of advice for women, from men and from women, is to have confidence. That the lack of confidence is really hurting them in their careers. So someone who, again, you seem full of confidence, but was there ever a time where you maybe faced self-doubt or questioned if you could make it? And if so, what are some of the things you did to overcome those barriers?
I think everybody has self-doubt. So no matter how confident somebody appears, every single one of us has that voice in our head that's saying, can you really do this? You know, is this right for you? Did you just get in over your head? You know, where are you going with this? So I think that's in everybody's head, and it's how do you silence that voice and push back past it to listen to the voice that's telling you, oh, yeah, you got this. This is where you're going. And I think the silencing of the self-doubt voice, I've always dealt with it by throwing myself into it. And when I have a clear plan in front of me of what my job is, what I need to get done, where I'm going with it, my confidence exudes. And it really comes out. So I love it when I can see the path that I'm going and can really drive us towards that and knowing where we're at. I will say at moments when I can't quite see that path, it's okay. I'm not afraid. It's okay to ask a mentor or somebody else for a little bit of advice and a little bit of help and say, okay, help me see this. This is what's going on. This is where we're going to get onto that right path. Because for me, when I can see it, when I know the path, I'm all in, I'm there, I'm confident, I'm going to drive it and we're going to go. The self-doubt then comes within that planning period. So that's when I reach out a bit more. I really work with others and make sure that I'm embracing, a team to really come up with that plan. But I will say every single one of us has that voice. We all do. So nobody has one that doesn't, because a lot of times it's that internal dialogue in our heads is mostly negative. And that's what drives self-doubt too. And it's hard to shut that down, but you've got to show it and show to yourself, yeah, okay. There's a reason that you're going into each of your next roles, and you've got to own it. And when you're in it, go make it happen.
I love, you mentioned the word, I'm not afraid. And I think a lot of times people confuse confidence with fear, that sometimes they overlap a lot, and being afraid of something. And the fact that you're not afraid to ask for help and that you try to be ultra prepared is it's a great solution. We just did a webinar. I don't know, again, if you know Dana Shaw Aramoto or not, but she and I did a webinar specifically on this topic and asked a lot of people for different pieces of advice and the being prepared and really making sure when you're going into a situation, the more prepared you are, the more confident you'll feel, but also not being afraid to ask people for help when you aren't feeling confident. And sometimes it's okay to not feel confident. You can't possibly know every single thing in the world, but walking in the room, certainly, you know, with the Amy Cuddy TED Talk and power posing and, you know, the way your body language speaks to people and to yourself, it's really that self piece. And again, as you said, just shutting down, if you can, if you know where that comes from, shutting it down in your head so it's not an external thing. But confidence is, I would agree, something that everyone continues to work on. And that's okay, too. It's almost like it's not necessarily something that you can solve or have completely go away. There will be different times where it kind of rears its head, so to speak. But working on it constantly and not being afraid to ask for help is a key thing.
Right.
So just shifting gears a little bit here, I've changed this term from work-life balance to harmony. Again, thanks to Dana, she and I during this podcast were talking a little bit about work-life balance. And I feel like every time I say that those words lately, I get really emotional just because of my own work-life balance and harmony that I try to find. As you know, I have a 2.5-year-old son, Grayson, and run a company and am involved in ARA, as I mentioned, and many other groups and organizations, and trying to find that harmony is a challenge, but it's something that, you know, you constantly work on. I know that I do as well. And the thing is, like, everyone asks for advice on it, and I feel like you can take bits and pieces from what everyone says, and there isn't ever one completely right answer. And, you know, what's right for me, Jeanette's not going to be right for you, perhaps, and vice versa. That said, again, I do like to hear how other people continue to strive on that front. You mentioned yourself early on in the conversation today, traveling the world all the time on airplanes more than you ever thought you would be. So perhaps you could share with us your top three. These are things you refuse to compromise. So refuse to compromise items when it comes to finding balance in your own life. And that could be anything from self-care, giving yourself permission, whatever it may be. What are three things that you refuse to compromise on?
Okay. I've got a few that I refuse to compromise on. I can answer that. So when I first started at Air Swift 4.5 years ago, I travel, I don't know, 250,000 to 300,000 miles a year. I am on a plane quite a lot, and they're all international flights. And I didn't realize the impact and the toll it would take on my body. And when your nutrition's not right, when your body's not synced right, it has an impact on your energy, it has an impact on your confidence, it has an impact on just how you carry yourself. So I gained 28 pounds during that time, which I'm not proud of. I will tell you, everyone, last bit of those pounds are now gone. And I went to a nutritionist. And this is one of my I will not compromise on ever again. But I made being active and going to my nutritionist a priority. And I sat down and I said, okay, this is my life. This is my world. This is my work. This is how I travel. Teach me how to eat again. How do I do this with all of this? Because this is ridiculous and I need a change. I need to do something because this isn't working. And it was a wonderful education and about myself as well. And it was one that I really got to understand where, you know, how I pull that together. The other thing I've done with the being active piece of it is when I have meetings sometimes too, for instance, I was in Manchester, my HR director and I had a long conversation we needed to go through. We went on a walk through Manchester instead of just sitting in a boardroom talking about it all. And all around the world, we're very active with the cancer societies in all of the different countries around the world. And we do our global relay for life every year. So when I land into different countries, I was just in Australia a month and a half ago. I did an almost 10K with them. Couple points off, but you know, so I will be active with them and with my colleagues and where I'm at now, but I will not compromise on that. And it was my lesson in accountability too. I do see my nutritionist because if I'm accountable to somebody else that I'm paying, then I know I'm going to do it. I don't cheat on myself. So it helps me. I know what accountability does at every level. So that's one of them. I would say the other thing, because I do travel so much, so my son was raised in this industry. I've been in this industry for well over 20 years. My son's now in college. And I think family is so incredibly important. And I've had to balance that my entire career of making enough time for his games and his life and what he's got going on and then my husband and everything else that we have going on in our family. But now that I travel so much as well, I have some fun with this. So based on my travel schedule and where I'm landing and where I'm going, I'll tack on an extra day. I'll have an extended layover. I do extended layovers to see my mom in, you know, San Francisco. I'll do an extended layover in another city just to make sure that I can see different parts of my family. And family is so important to me that even when you have a schedule like this, there's always time to figure it out and to make time for the things that matter. And the last one, I think that this one is one that I probably have had to work on the most for my career. So I'm always on. I never want to turn off, you know, my phone or walk away from the business. I always want to be there and be present. But I've learned through time that if you really go on a vacation, truly go on a vacation, and actually unplug, that is something that your productivity, your energy, your wellness, your mental state of mind, you can just refresh completely and come back and be in such a better place than if you're working the entire time. So when I plan my vacations, I plan them pretty carefully so that I can actually empower everybody else to do what they need to do, disappear for the amount of time I'm gone, enjoy getting recharged, and come right back into it. I actually found that lesson by mistake. It was a trip I made to China probably about 8 or 9 years ago, and none of my technology worked while I was there for 2 weeks. So I was forced to unplug, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. So, unplug a little.
Well, I love it. So health, family, and refresh. Take vacations, but really unplug. And something, a new tidbit here would be the nutritionist side, and I love that we all stress out about travel and, you know, I'm exhausted, or it's just, you know, the meetings are running too late, or there's all these breakfasts and dinners and everything else. So typically it's, I can't fit in a workout that people give themselves such a hard time over, but the eating component is really critical. And I agree with you completely that if you have someone like a nutritionist you can lean on, they can help you eat more healthy on the road and share with you different tips for that. I use a group called Beyond the Box Nutrition and Box for CrossFit because that's my guilty pleasure of working out, and they're great about giving you that advice and so forth. So I am with you on that one. It's not always easy, but when you do it, you have to do that. And I give you a lot of credit for sharing that story and that piece. Just being healthy is so important for yourself, your mental health. My latest thing to work on is sleep. So getting more sleep will be helpful. So I've been doing it. I've realized that, wait a minute, I eat really well. I work out all the time. But what is it? Like, why am I, it's the sleep factor. You know, you can't sleep 4 to 6 hours a night and expect to be full on. So got to work on that one, but it's in the works. So with that, I am going to put you on the spot and end with a little fun today. I've learned so much about you. So thank you again for being on and being so open and sharing all of your stories. But tell us one thing we don't already know about you that others may find surprising.
All right. I will say, so I travel the world, and I get to see the world from, you know, a certain vantage point. But one of my favorite things to do is to go scuba diving. Now, I love diving because I love when I go under the water. To me, it is quiet. It is peaceful. It is like my zen. It is, I was a swimmer growing up. My first job was a lifeguard. It's just anything with water I'm comfortable around. But I love diving just because of the calm and the peace that I get there. And one of my goals in life, too, is I explore enough of the world above the water. I really want to explore more of the world below the water.
Oh, I love that. Well, you're the first to say that. That's really beautiful. That's great. Well, thank you for sharing that story, and I guess we'll end it here. How can people get in touch with you?
I'm most active on LinkedIn, so you can find me there at Jeanette Marks.
All right. Terrific. Well, thank you again so much. I really, really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us today and offer up advice to our audience on the Edge podcast. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
Thanks for listening to this week's The Edge episode. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And you can also email me at etatum, T-A-T-U-M, at clearedgemarketing.com. And let me know if you have any questions or if you want to hear about anything in particular as it relates to our Women in Staffing series or our marketing episodes. So just shoot me an email and I look forward to connecting with you. Thank you.